I'll just repeat where we are. There are three traditional tracks of Buddhism that you can go on. One is the highest one is the Bodhisattva track, and then these lower two. The Bodhisattva track, if you reach the end of it, you become a Buddha, meaning you know all things, past, present, and future, and you can send emanations to every planet in the world. You can send an emanation to every bus, in every city, in every planet, and sit next to somebody and irritate them who needs to be tested. Okay? And then on the lower two tracks, all you do is reach nirvana, which means you eliminate your negative emotions forever. So nirvana means permanent stopping of all your anger, jealousy, etc. And then bodhisattva track, if you reach the end of it, you become an enlightened being who can emanate on billions of planets and billions of buses, countless buses, okay? You wondered where they were all coming from, right? Okay, so then the bodhisattva track people say, even if you just want to get rid of your negative emotions, you must see emptiness directly, okay? Then they also say there's no degrees of emptiness. You either see it or you don't see it, right? So the question comes, then how can these lower track people reach nirvana if they have to see emptiness, right? Because how can they see the full emptiness if they're not a bodhisattva, you know? How's that possible? And the because the bodhisattva people say these lower people do eliminate their mental, their negative emotions, okay? Got it? So the lower schools are saying, well, did Lord Buddha teach emptiness in the lower tracks? And the bodhisattva track says, yes. And then the lower tracks will say, what kind of Buddhism, what kind of emptiness did he teach? And then the upper track says the wrong one, or a lower one, or an incomplete one, because they couldn't handle it. Okay? The lower tracks couldn't handle it. And then the question comes, they ask the higher track, well, do you have to see the full form of emptiness to remove your negativities? And they say yes. So they say, you're saying the Buddha taught our lower tracks a wrong kind of emptiness, but that we can get rid of our negative emotions. And they say yes. And they say, but the only way we can get rid of our negative emotions is to see the right kind of emptiness, right? And they say right. Okay? So they say, okay, so let me get this straight. Lord Buddha taught us a lower kind of emptiness, which if you perceive, you can't get rid of your negativities. But then some of us were really smart, and we figured out how to see the full emptiness just from the partial explanation. And they said, right. Okay, got it? Then these guys say, well, isn't there a scripture where Buddha said that our version of emptiness and your version of emptiness are the same? Okay? That's where we are. And then our guy said, nah, there's no such scripture. And then these guys said, well, isn't there this guy, Nagarjuna? And didn't he say something about our version of emptiness, which means everything wears out? Okay? Why is life meaningless? Because everything wears out. Why is life illusory? Because everything wears out. Okay? That's their version of emptiness. Okay? And you hear that a lot, right? People get up in a Buddhist talk and say, if you can sensitize yourself to the fact that everything wears out eventually, then you'll be happy. And you'll reach the goals of Buddhism. You know? So what they're saying in essence is, you can't do anything about it, so get used to it. And just deal with it. You know, like, and then they get into this thing like, don't want anything. Don't hope for anything. You know? Just give up. Just be. Stare at the wall. You know? Just relax. Don't worry that kids are getting burned in Iraq. You know? Just relax. Poop's going to happen and you can't do anything about it. Your life's going to wear out. And as a Buddhist, you will reach nirvana if you just learn to chill about that situation, because you can't change the situation. Things wear out. That's emptiness according to them. If you see that, you will overcome your anger, jealousy, etc. Why? You know, who's going to get angry at somebody who's going to... What did he call it? Voltaire said... He said, we are fellow sufferers for a day. He said, human beings are fellow sufferers for a day. So, I mean, if you appreciate that the people you meet that you're going to be irritated at are just people who are going to die in a few days or a few weeks or months, then you're not going to get upset at them, you know. I always tell the story. I was on this plane that was going down, and everyone got really friendly with each other, right? There were no, you know, we were crash landing, and everyone suddenly got very friendly with each other, you know, and all these emotions. Nobody was complaining during the whole time, you know. There was this intense love came up among the people. So if we, what they're saying is, if you really understood that nothing lasts, you would get an intense love for all the people around you, which is true, okay? But we say it's not enough. It will wear off after 2 days after you hear the lecture, you know, and you're irritated at somebody, okay? All right? So, but they've come up with this, with a quotation from Aryanagarjuna, and here it is, okay? And then we just covered it last class. To stop your suffering, to eliminate pain, to purify your negativities, the end of all trouble, the freedom from all desire, the end, the passing, never again encountering pain. This is peace, this is the sublime. And as we saw, Mira pointed out, he's switching from losing things wearing out, he begins to equate with emptiness. So the lower school guy is saying, see, even Aryanagarjuna agrees with us. Who's Aryanagarjuna? He started the middle way school, right? He started the higher school. So if even the guy who started the higher school agrees that wearing out is the same as emptiness, then you can't complain about our version of emptiness. Okay, got it? Just nod, okay? All right, that's a rule in this class. You just nod. All right, otherwise it takes too long. If we have to wait for you to understand it. All right. Okay, now, that quotation, I'm just going to flash the quotation again. It's pretty obscure, right? It's pretty, what do you call it? Recondite. It's mystical, right? So we need some explanation of it. Got it? So we're going to get some explanation of it. But let's read together. 1, 2, 3. Kang dung al di ma lu pa pang ba she pa ne pa she pe par ki da chong ba sen di nye leng gi pum bo hak me nyang de thom ma tha de nyam sha de sing wa me pa ten. Okay. This is, I'm just, those of you who are sort of advanced in your Tibetan, okay? This is a pretty common formula, and you should get familiar with it, okay? Somebody like Alistair or Jason or somebody like that. Okay, so this is key, right? Buy something, and then at the end is the word ten, pasten, right? So that's a formula that's very common in commentaries or scripture, meaning the words, these words are saying this. Got it? A, ki, b, ten. Okay, the words A, blah, 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 are indicating blah, 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 B. Got it? A, ki, b, ten. Got it? So it's just a way of commenting on scripture. Okay? You say, these words are conveying, okay, besten, something. Okay? So the words beginning with those that include, the elimination of every bit of suffering. Up to Nupa. And how do we translate Nupa? Peace. Ooh, Trojan. Okay. Somebody keeps sending me Trojan. Okay. All right. I guess it's a passing, right? The final end. Passing. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Just for those of you who are translating a lot, okay? The English syntax will be different from the Tibetan, right? So the Tibetan might start with elimination of every bit of suffering until you to get. You see what I mean? And then when you translate somebody who's saying, the words from here up to there say, right? You have to adjust it. And the way I do it sometimes is I say, the phrase that includes the words. And then you get out of the problem. You can see in the syntax. Okay. Or if you want to drive the hypertexter crazy, you replace the words of the English. You replace the words of the Tibetan with the words of the English, which aren't the Tibetan words anymore. But that's another thing. Got it? Yeah, I like to do it that way sometimes. I hear them groaning 3 years later. It's some kind of clairvoyance. Okay, I thought that was an include. Okay, the words are a reference to the fact that the I'm going to do it this way and we'll see. To the fact that so this gets into gakcha. Okay, we have to go to gakcha. When you study gakcha, gakcha ngula marekpa de ngume jimayen se gakcha ngula marekpa de ngume jimayen. That's Master Shantideva. And he said, until such time as you identify the gakcha, you cannot perceive emptiness, right? You can't perceive that it's not there. Okay? So gakcha, as you know, most of the older students know, is the thing that emptiness is empty of. So when you say the room is empty, somebody says, go in and see if the room is empty. And you come out and you say, go and see if it's there. You hear somebody say to somebody else, go and see if it's there. And they go into the temple and they come out and they say, it's not there. You know, and then in your mind, you're sort of curious, right? Like, what is it that wasn't there? And they say, the birthday cake that was supposed to be ready for somebody. Okay? It's not there. Got it? So you can say that there was a voidness in the room. There was an emptiness in the room. Something was missing in the room. And it was reported back to you that the thing you were wondering about, the birthday cake, wasn't in the room yet. So we can say the room was void of the birthday cake. Got it? Or the room was void of, or was empty of birthday cake. Got it? So when we say emptiness, we mean something's not there. Okay? Except the trick, the beauty of it is, when you're talking about the emptiness, which if you see it, you can remove your jealousy forever. Right? When you're talking about that kind of emptiness, the thing that's not there is something that could never have been there anyway. Okay? Could you go in the temple and check if there's a, you know, Geshe Michael's waiting outside because he's nervous. And you say, what's he nervous? You know? And he says, he's got this phobia about two-headed 18-foot purple elephants. You know? And he'd like you to go in the temple and just check around. Like, look under the teaching throne and check under the chairs. Is there an 18-foot purple elephant with two heads? And if there's not, he'll come in. You know, so you know, you send the Israeli bodyguards, and they check everywhere. And then Liran comes out and says, "You know, Geshe-la, I did a really thorough check. I even checked under the seats there, and there's no two-headed 18-foot purple elephant." Okay, got it. So the irony of life is that the thing that emptiness is empty of never could have been there in the first place. Okay? The person who irritates you the most in your life, who is not coming directly from what you're doing, never existed, never was there. Okay? The person who irritates you the most in your life, who is not coming from directly from how you behave, could never be there anyway. Got it? So what's the implication? You have spent your whole life getting upset at people who were never there anyway. Okay, is there a person there? Yes. Is there an irritating person there? Definitely. Are they not coming from you? No. Okay. How's that going to make me happy? Yeah, if they're coming from me, I could do something about it. If they're coming from themselves, I just have to put up with them. You see, a lot of Buddhist teaching is like how to put up with bad stuff. That's not emptiness. Emptiness means, if it's empty, it means it's not coming from itself, it's coming from me. And once I understand that emptiness, I can truly be happy, because then I can do the things that, I can get rid of all the people I don't like. A real, I'm going to call it an emptinesser, okay? It's new vocabulary. A real emptinesser is engaged in the, what do you call it? In the glorious mission of removing everyone they don't like from the world. Okay? Just by being nice to people. Okay? Got it? And that makes sense. So anyway, gakcha means the thing that emptiness is empty of. Got it? Okay? If something is emptiness, should it be appearing to the direct perception of an emptiness perceiver in deep meditation? Yeah, okay. And so if someone's seeing emptiness directly, that what's appearing to their perceptions, okay, should be emptiness. Got it? Okay. And that should be a lack of something. Okay, so when you're talking about a high person, an arhat, right? Somebody who already got rid of their anger, their jealousy, and they're meditating on emptiness today. Is emptiness appearing to them? Of course. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What's that emptiness empty of? Are they focusing on the fact that the apple didn't come from nowhere? Or the fact that the weather didn't come from nowhere? You see? They're focusing, right after they achieved nirvana, they happen to be focusing on their own old heaps. And they no longer appear to them the way they used to. Their body and mind, as they used to think of them, are what's absent to their perceptions. Got it? Their body and mind, as they used to think of them, are what is absent to their perceptions. Okay? And that body and mind are things that wear out. So can we say that to the perception of a newly achieved arhat, the fact that their body is wearing out is appearing to them in some sense? Aren't they focused on some quality of their old body and mind? But isn't the emptiness they're focused on the emptiness of their old body and mind?
Yeah, but it's not a quality.
Empty is not a quality?
No, their old body and mind.
It doesn't pertain to the thing?
Their old body and mind don't show up because those are qualifiers.
That's what I'm saying. Emptiness is a qualifier of all objects. All objects possess their own emptiness. You see? So let's run it by it again. They're perceiving an emptiness. It happens to be the emptiness of their old body and their old mind. Their old body and their old mind were such that they were constantly wearing down, changing moment by moment, getting older, dying, okay? To an arhat's perceptions, is their old body and mind appearing? Is the emptiness of their old body and mind appearing? So isn't the emptiness of their old body and mind directly connected to their body, old body and mind? So can't we say that they are perceiving the lack of something about their old body and mind? Can't we say then that they are perceiving the fact that things wear out? Are they perceiving a fact? Will that fact wear out? Will the thing that the fact is about wear out? Almost the same thing. Got it? That's what they want to say. Got it? the lower school wants to say, look, they're focusing on their old body and mind, which was wearing out. Got it? And they're seeing emptiness about that. So emptiness and wearing out are the same, which is not true, but they're saying that. Okay? Got it? Okay. Yeah. Did I leave out Dhamma? Was I? Probably not. The mind. Yeah. Hang on. Of an anime story? Okay. By the way, just to review something, okay? These are all technical terms. It's like trying to teach somebody about physics and they don't know what a quark is. You know what I mean? They talk about nirvana with nothing left over. What's the lower school's interpretation of that term? Nirvana, where nothing is left over. Huh? Yeah, your old body and your old mind. They just disappear. Okay, so in the Abhidharma, in the lowest school of Buddhism, you know, there is an idea that when you reach nirvana, you just go out of existence. Your old body, your old mind go out of existence. You know, and they leave it like that. So that's where the wrong idea or the weird idea that you just disappear when you reach nirvana came from. In the West, you know, people said, what do you want to reach nirvana where you're just a vegetable or you're not anything or nothing's left? And yeah, that's what, how the Abhidharma says it. The higher schools say what? In response to that, what do they say? Is the person who achieved that an arhat? They say yes. Who is he? What's he look like? You know, what, you know, does he have two arms? Does he think anything? You know, and they say no. Why? He doesn't have a body, doesn't have a mind. So, okay, you're positing a person who doesn't have a body and doesn't have a mind. And that's where they leave it. That's how the Abhidharma leaves it at that. Okay, what's the very unique and special interpretation of the nirvana without remainder, which is presented in the highest school of Buddhism? Yeah, meaning what?
In a state of meditation, the heaps don't appear, and then they subsequently appear when you come out of that state of meditation. So that's nirvana.
Yeah, you could say that. That's better. So really, first you achieve nirvana without anything left, and then you achieve nirvana with something left. Whereas in the Abhidharma, you achieve nirvana with something left, and then you achieve nirvana without something left. In some schools of prasangika thought, nirvana without remainder means the direct perception of emptiness, period. And then when you come out of it, you come back to all these deceptive perceptions. So in a sense, your baggage is back. So first you achieve no baggage, and then you achieve with baggage. Maybe baggage is a good translation of leftover. I'll have to work on that. Okay. But that's very interesting. You see, baggage... That's a more beautiful and subtle interpretation of baggage, right? Somebody says, did you get rid of your baggage yet? And then, you know, an Abhidharma person would say, no, I still have my flesh and blood body. You know, I'm still wandering around ignorant. You know, I still can't see all things. And I still have that kind of baggage. But then you ask a Madhyamika person, do you still have your baggage? And they'd say, yes. And you'd say, why? And you'd say, things are still appearing to be as if they come from their own side. Things are still appearing to me as if they come from their own side. And that's the worst baggage to have. In Tantra, what would be the worst baggage? Yeah, it still appears to me that at least two or three people in this room are not special. Like, they're okay, I agree there could be like five angels in this room. But I definitely know three schmucks. You know? And, you know. So then if the perception of the three schmucks... is baggage, tantric baggage, okay? There's three. I agree everybody else could be enlightened, but not those guys. Okay, all right. You have your own. All right. Okay, one, two, three. Dung el shen ki sami jor shepa men che ki da chong be ma ong be pum bo nyam sha te sin ngor me pa tem be. So the debating wasn't useless, right, Scott? Where is he? Right? So he got stuck. Where? In Taiwan? I don't remember. Yeah, so he got suddenly, he's up in a couple hundred people. He's up in front of a whole auditorium of people in Singapore. And I'm like, okay, you have to debate right now. You know, and if we hadn't done this, he would have just gone, ugh. But instead he was like, yeah, you know, it's really cool. Okay. I think there's a mistake in both of these texts. Is that Windows 7 yet? Does anybody know how it sounds? They should have one that has like Lama Christie saying something Bokjimbian. Okay. Okay, we'll go on. yeah, that would be good. They have a nice one of Lama Supa. There's a ringtone of Lama Supa we heard in Singapore. And he was on a radio show in Mongolia. I forget what they asked him. They asked him some question and he burst out laughing. He's like, ah! So now when Tara Milwani's phone rings, it's like, ah! You know, it's her Lama laughing. It's really cute. Okay. See, here's that same formula for those of you who are kind of more along in your Tibetan. There's A followed by an instrumental. Okay, by A is tembad, is indicated something else. Okay, by A is indicated B. Okay, A is saying B. Okay, got it? So, and the part all the way down, all the way from never going on down, is meant to express the fact that the heaps that the enemy destroyer will possess in the future and we'll just steal this part, see? That's how you can translate hundreds of pages in a week. Okay. Appear to the perception of the mind and the part all the way from never again encountering pain on down is meant to express the fact that the heaps that the enemy destroyer will possess in the future cannot appear to the perceptions of their mind. Okay? Yeah, because
he's got heaps, but he's achieved never again encountering pain. So how can he be free of heaps? And I mean, how can he
still have heaps?
Not free of heaps and encounter pain. In other words, if he's reached final nirvana.
Oh, they took out. Be careful. How did they describe the heaps in this first part? Yeah, that's a code word in Buddhism for suffering heaps. Because take on in this life means took on by the force of karma and kleshas. Was forced to take on. But look what happened in the second quotation. He took out that part. He took out Nirlengi. Okay? So now it could be heaps that he chose to take on. You see what I mean? We don't know. All right? Like that. So wouldn't the body and mind that he would choose to take on in the future appear to his meditation? Is he going to have body and mind in the future? Pure one. Purified. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, except for Abhidharma school, he's going to have some kind of body and mind, right? So, if he had some kind of clairvoyance or something, wouldn't those body and mind appear to his mind? No, but... Say again. No, I'm going to say it again. Will he have a pure body and mind in the future? Yes. If he's going to, like, look into the future with his clairvoyance, wouldn't he see that body and mind? So in a state of deep meditation, would not he see his future body and mind? Ah, good. He's on meditating on emptiness of his future body and mind. Okay? Meaning, when you see the fact that your future body and mind aren't coming from anyone but you, you're not seeing your future body and mind. Got it? When you're seeing the fact that there's no two-headed purple elephant in this room, you're not seeing a two-purple-headed purple elephant. Got it? When you're seeing that one is gone, you're not seeing it. Got it? Or else it wouldn't be gone. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. And you should know that when a scripture refers to an arhat or a bodhisattva, it's not necessarily not a Buddha. And we saw that in the tantric class with what? Yeah, the bodhisattva who would take on any, the chameleon bodhisattva, who would take on any appearance to help others. You know? Right? The one who would appear as a girl, the one who would appear as a man, the one who would appear as a woman, the one who would appear as a meditator, the one who would appear as an author or a musician or anything. You know what I mean? We had that. Right? Okay. Okay, this is a little tricky. 1, 2, 3. Da chombe chen di nyele ki pumbo nyam sha de singor mepa ne lu yin ki de ke wa chi me sak che nyele ki pumbo de singor mepa ne lu Mayin te de ta ne cham de ya me pe. I'm just going to make a change that you can check with the carving, okay, Alistair? I think this should be the key, all right? There's a 2% chance it could be Keith, but you're going to check for me. Okay. The key word here for you to learn is this. Say neluk. Neluk. Say neluk. Neluk. Neluk means the way of barley. Okay? Now say neluk. Neluk. That means the way things are. The way things really are. Ne means to be, to stay. Luk means the way. So neluk means the way things really are. And that's a synonym for emptiness. Okay, so neluk, tombanyi, dekonanyi, deshinyi, these are all synonyms. Okay, suchness, emptiness, hachunness, these are all synonyms for emptiness, all right? So what he's saying is that whoever's talking here is saying, when the arhat goes into deep meditation, okay, and they don't see before them their old body and mind, that's niluk. Got it? And they don't see their old body and mind, that's niluk. That's emptiness. Ki. At the end of a sentence, at the end of a phrase, must mean but. Okay? In 1% of the time, it means but. In 99% of the time, it means apostrophe S. Right? Okay? But when it's at the end of a... You don't end a sentence with John's... you know? Okay? Unless you say this code isn't John's. But anyway, not in Tibetan. But for him not to see his future heaps before his mind when he's in the direct perception of emptiness is not nelu, emptiness, because they were never there anyway. They're not going to be there. But he cheated. Whoever's saying this cheated. Because look what he put in front of the heaps here. He put the impure heaps. He's, what do you call it? What do you call it when you change the meaning of terms halfway through a debate? Yeah, he's equivocating. He's equivocating, okay? Does a bodhisattva, does an arhat who's in the direct perception of emptiness see their old dirty heaps, mind, body and mind? No, they can't, okay? Does a arhat who's in a direct perception of emptiness see their future dirty heaps? What? Yeah, what's the big deal, you know? He's not going to have them, okay? He never had those even in a nominal sense. He never had those even in a deceptive sense. Got it? Whoever's talking now is changing the terms. Because our guy was careful when he talked about the future heaps not to put the words impure. But now he's adding them back. Got it? Does an arhat perceive his old heaps when he's in the direct perception of emptiness? Does his non-perception of his old heaps as being something self-existent constitute the direct perception of emptiness? Yes. Does his perception that his old heaps weren't coming from anywhere else constitute his direct perception of emptiness now? Yeah, it does. Okay? Got it? So, his perception then, you said yes, right? So his perception then, in the future, that he won't have dirty heaps is the perception of emptiness. No. Because see, he never was going to have them anyway. Got it? Got it? Okay? So can we say that his perception that in the future he won't have any heaps is the direct perception of emptiness? I changed. I just changed. Got it? I just changed. I didn't say dirty heaps. Does he perceive that he won't have heaps in the future? Does he perceive that he won't have a body and mind in the future? No, he doesn't. He would never perceive that because he is going to have a body and mind in the future. Unless you're an Abhidharma freak out or something, okay? So does his perception that he's not going to have a body and mind in the future, is that his perception of emptiness? Right. Does his perception that he won't have a dirty body and mind in the future, is that the direct perception of emptiness? If someone insisted that he will have some perception about his future and body and mind, where he sees that something about it is missing, could that be the direct perception of emptiness? I'll say it again. If he had some kind of perception about his future body and mind, where he saw that something about them was missing, could that be the direct perception of emptiness? Yeah. Okay, got it? That's all. But once I say his future dirty body and mind, you know, if he sees that he's not going to have a future dirty body in mind, is that the direct perception of emptiness? Then you can say no. Is the fact that he's not going to have a dirty body in mind in the future a fact?
Yes.
Is an existing thing? Is it an existing thing, that fact? Do all existing things in the universe have their own emptiness? So doesn't that fact have its own emptiness? Yeah. So when he sees that he won't have a dirty body and mind in the future, could he not be seeing emptiness? Okay, we won't go there, but we did go there. Okay, no, then I'm equivocating because I'm changing the terms, right? Because we weren't debating about the fact that he wouldn't have a future body in mind, dirty future in body. We were talking about his future body, dirty body in mind, which don't exist. The fact that he won't have them does exist. So I switched you over halfway through, and you didn't notice, and you didn't stop me. And that, then you hung yourself halfway through. Okay. All right. I equivocated the opposite way, if you care. Okay. Okay. The fact that the history on this is indeed the real nature of things, okay? But the fact that the impure heaps that they are going to take on in their subsequent lives, okay? The fact that the impurities that they are going to take on their subsequent cannot appear to their perceptions in this same meditation, okay? Is not the real nature of things. Because they could never exist, even in a nominal sense. Okay, got it? Oops. Sorry? Oh, okay, even in... Yeah, I have a team of four people at the Lama House who just supply prepositions for me. I'm not kidding, right? All right. Got it? You got it, right? Just nod. Okay. We got to go back up and find the word sepa. Where was that? Sepa, right? Just before the loss of the finish, right? We called it the finish. Okay. And when that, we didn't read this, right? I'm going to put the finish, okay? The finish. Okay, one, two, three. Sepa dong ni tu sumba teyang nye lengi humbo dhamane sepa am rang shingi sepa chepa yinte. Tibetan doesn't have diphthongs, okay, where you have two vowel songs sounds head to head, except almost here. Say pa'am. Pa'am. Okay, it means either, okay, like that. All right, so, and when they, and when the text refers to the finish as emptiness, right? It's a reference to the fact that the heaps that we have taken on are dhamme. Dhamme. Dhamma is tough. Dhamma name means from always. Okay? Taken on R from the very beginning, right? Finished. And then, you see, he's saying, your body and mind are finished. Then he says, pa'am. Pa'am is how you introduce in a positive, normally, which means, I don't think you're going to understand what I mean when I say your body is finished and your mind is finished. So I better clarify. I better add some other phrase that clarifies what I mean when I say Stefan's body is finished or Stefan's mind is finished, because it's not quite. All right, so from the very finished, which is to say, what? Rang shinki sepa. He's using sepa in the sense of void or empty, okay? So we have to somehow squeeze, we have to twist it into the English. Finished of having any nature of their own. Okay? Or devoid of having. The expression, not having any nature of its own, is important, okay? We throw it around a lot. Does fire have any nature? What's the nature of fire? Yeah, it's sashin sekpa. It's hot and it burns you. That's the nature of fire. In fact, you could say it's the defining nature of fire, right? It's the one quality that fire must have, right? So does it have a nature of its own? No, because when we say a nature of its own, we mean that the heat and the capacity to burn exist in the fire and are not being granted or placed on the fire by us, by our karma. Okay? Got it? I think the best example of this is in medicine, especially in headache pills, right? If you want to get to the idea of not having a nature of its own, it's very helpful to talk about headache medicines, okay? So is there a substance or is there a quality of a headache medicine that would remove your headache? Does that white pill have anything in it? We say in it, right, in English. Rangshin Yudupa means in it, okay? Does it have anything in it which can stop your headache? No, for the very simple reason that if it did, then any time you took it, it would cure your headache, or anybody who took it, it would cure their headache. And we know that's not true. Therefore, the quality of removing a headache isn't in medicine. So the word in, you know, ultimately, Nagarjuna, the beauty of Arya Nagarjuna is that he doesn't fool around with all his philosophy terms. He says, go home, think about why the English word in is wrong. In is impossible. I mean, Arya Nagarjuna would get up here and say, in is impossible, and he'd stop the class and you'd have popcorn or something. Are we ready for popcorn or something? Did we make anything?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. You want to stop the class on in? Nah, because then I wouldn't have anything to do. Except translate your next anyway. So there's nothing. When you say Rangshinki Madhupa, it doesn't have any nature of its own. You can think it doesn't have any nature in it. It doesn't have anything in it. Okay. So where is? I like to get into the idea of loading something, right? I like to, in Asia we found that was very helpful for people. It really, really helped them. Okay. Medicine doesn't have inside of it anything that can cure your headache. But I still take aspirin. I took 2 aspirin today. Why? Yeah, if I load the aspirin, it will cure my headache. Does a stapler put 2 pieces of paper together? If it's got staples in it, you see? Okay, got it? The whole world and all the medicines which do exist in the world are like staplers, okay? In and of themselves, they can't stick two pieces of paper together. If they're loaded with staples, they will hold two pieces of paper together. If they're not, they won't. Don't go freaking out if you hold a stapler up to two pieces of paper and they don't stick together. Don't blame the stapler, okay? You didn't put staples in it, okay? Don't blame your aspirin. Don't blame the last operation you had, you know? Don't blame the business strategy you were thinking of. Don't blame the way you thought you were gonna get your girlfriend. You know, it would have worked if you had loaded it, okay? So then, how do you load aspirin? You pay attention to the people around you. You know, if you have a migraine problem, right? So, don't go looking for new kinds of medicine. Try to find one or two other people who has the same problem or a similar problem and take care of them and help them, right? Two ways you could help them. Give them new medicines or explain to them, I mean, when they're ready, explain to them how to really fix their headache, right? But either one is good karma, and either one will load your medicine. Got it? So does medicine have a quality of helping? We can say it has the capacity if you load it. You know, if it's loaded, then you take it, your headache will go away. Good? People in Asia, it was so clear to them, and they were so happy. One lady in Vietnam burst into tears at this point. She came in and she was sobbing. And she's just a business, you know, she's just a person who runs a business. And she said, I got it. You know, after all these years of hearing Buddhist lectures, blah, 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 this staple thing, now I get it, you know. I just have to load stuff because I want to do something. I want to have a business strategy. You can't get up there and say, don't have a business strategy. You know, get up and tell me a business strategy, then tell me how to load it, and I'll get successful. And she was bawling. It was really beautiful. And you knew she got it because she was bawling. You know? Okay. This is tricky. Yeah, this is really tricky. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Stop. Say, Dendrawway. Dendrawway. Where's the N? It's the owl, okay? It's the prenasal. Two prefix letters can give an N sound to a D. They are owl and mao, okay? O means prefix letter. Owl, say owl. Mao. This is an owl. Okay, here we go again. Don't say de drawe, okay? You're going to say what? Den drawe. And then a Tibetan knows what the hell you're talking about. De drawe means I got caught in a trap. Dendrawe means that kind of thing. Got it? Tawa means a trap. You see, if you don't prenasal it, they don't understand what you're saying. Oh, you got caught in a trap. I'm, you know, where does it hurt, you know? Okay. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Dendrawe humbo de rangshin ki dhub na yamsha de singo ye gupa le. Maybe. Sure. Because if heaps like this were to exist through some nature of their own, then they would have to exist to the perceptions of this type of meditation. Whereas they do not. That's a pretty bizarre statement, if you ask me. If a medicine were to work on its own, then it should appear to the meditation of a highly realized being. But it doesn't. I'll say it again. If medicine had some power of its own, then by definition, that medicine would have to appear to the meditative consciousness of a deep of a highly realized person in deep meditation. Why? It would have an it would be ultimate nature. It would be ultimate. But I would go at it this way. How do you get to emptiness? How do you get to emptiness?
Eliminating what isn't there in the first place.
You go looking. You go looking. Check in the temple. See if there's that elephant in there. And then Geshe-la won't be so nervous. We won't have to put a restraining order on the elephant. Okay? All right? Got it? Okay? Geshe-la won't be so nervous. Got it? The perception of emptiness implies a search. The realization that what you thought was there was not there can only come after... looking for it. Okay? So, how you get into a meditation on emptiness is you go looking for a thing that could exist from its own side. When you don't find it, you have found emptiness. Okay? So if there was a pill that could cure everybody's headache, as all the advertisements claim, then the arhat, who's looking to see if anything does exist by itself, would have found it. Okay? In this case, they're not talking about a pill, they're talking about his body and mind. Got it? Okay? He would have found that. Because that's what he was looking for just before he figured out there wasn't there. Okay? Got it? It's nice, right? That's okay, we can do that. That'll fit. Okay. One, two, three. Dhamane sepala chepa in ki mamawa de patar nyempa sepala chepa mayinte. I'm again going to change it to the privative key. And you have to check the carving, which is still, if it doesn't agree with me, it was wrong. All right. I'm going to challenge Eva to try to get this one, but I'll help you. We're talking about finished dhamane, and we're not talking about finished because you used a nyembo. Okay, got it? If I say, look, this was finished, okay, something was finished, there's two, it could be in two senses, right? One is that I used to have this problem, then I went to Madhyamika class, and now I don't have that problem anymore, which is the purpose of this class, but it hasn't worked on any of us. Okay, so, okay, I finished off my jealousy. I finished off my anger. Nyempu sepa. Nyempu sepa. Got it? And then the author is saying, look, when we're saying finished here, we're not talking about nyempu sepa. We mean what? Yeah. Yeah, so in a way the word finished is tricky, even in Tibetan, right? It's been finished forever. Got it? What about you has been finished forever?
My self-existence.
Yeah. The fact that you're coming from yourself. Well, that's tricky. The podium that came from a factory was finished from the beginning.
That's right.
Got it? Okay? I didn't have to apply my wisdom to finish it. Okay, got it? It wasn't finished through some spiritual antidote. It's always been finished in the sense that it never had, it never was from its own side. Got it? It never was from a factory. Got it? It's been finished since forever. Oh, that's a great translation. Okay, wait. Uh, Yeah. Yeah, he is. I'm just pausing so that I'll have something to do for 20 years with you guys. Ngomawa. Those who profess a ngopo. Those who claim there is a working thing. Okay? Those who claim that anything can do anything. Got it? Those who claim that anything can do anything. Who is that? Yeah. The three lower schools. Why are they called those who say that there do exist things that do something? Huh? Wait, let me ask you another question. Does the highest school of Buddhism assert that things can do something? So cannot they be called those who assert that things do something? Not in this sense. Good. Not in this sense. Because when we say here, those who say that things can do things, we're talking about people who believe that things can do things because something inside of them. So for example, aspirin. Okay? Aspirin. So if you're a ngomawa, right? If you're a person who says that things really can do something, from their own side, what are you saying about the aspirin? There's something in the aspirin. What do they call it on the box? Active ingredient. It's the active we have a problem with. It's the active we have a problem with. Okay, got it? We don't like the active. Active is ngomawa. Got it? Somebody who writes active on a box, they're ngomawa. Okay? The active ingredient. The stuff inside that really does the thing, and not the gel and the coloring and everything else. The active ingredient. Inside it really does something. Got it? They believe there's something coming from the aspirin sign. Why? Because if it was just all what I wanted, then you could eat rocks and your headache would go away. Right?
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. I never said that, right? I say if you loaded the rock, maybe. Okay? If you loaded the rock, maybe. Okay, but I never said just rocks. And I didn't say just because you wanted it. You have to go be nice to somebody, then you eat the rock. Okay? Alright? But aspirins are closer to being effective than rocks. I don't know. Watch that, right? Are the old body and mind of an arhat finished? Yeah. They're finished. In a way, they're finished, right? They moved into a new body and mind. Were those old body and mind finished because they worked at practicing the Dharma, or have they always been finished? Who said yes? Yeah, good. Okay? Both. Both. It's a diamond deal, right? They're finished in the sense that they were never what they are themselves. But they're also finished in the sense that he applied a spiritual antidote. And the lower school is mixing up what Aryanagarjuna wanted to say. He didn't say they were finished off by spiritual antidotes. He meant they're finished off in the sense that they never had those qualities in the first place. Got it? But we agree that Aryanagarjuna saying, your heaps are finished off, was confusing. Because normally when something's always been that way, you don't say, I finished it off. Got it? So we can't blame the guy. It's all right. All right. One, two, three. 대다인나 법자 학매냥대 예배드스 토바보 라촌바매바당 토바보 라촌바 예배드스 톱자 학매냥대 매바케레 그배견예배. What's gyen? What does it mean when a Tibetan comes up and he says gyen mendu? No problem. In India, that means you're in trouble, right? Is my reservation to Kathmandu ready on the Wednesday? Gyen mendu? No problem, sir. Then you know you have to go to another travel agent. Okay. So kin means a problem. Okay. All right. Kin means a problem. Because if it were that way, then there is the logical problem. We'll say that. In time where what we were trying to achieve, that is, nirvana with no remainder, we're already present. Then the enemy destroyer could not be. And at that point in time, when the person who was trying to achieve this thing, that is the enemy destroyer, were present, at that point in time when the person is trying to achieve this thing, that is the enemy were present, then the nirvana without remainder that they were trying to achieve could not be present. Okay, let's go slow. Is this guy trying, is the arhat trying to achieve nirvana? Well, before he becomes an arhat, is there some guy meditating who's trying to achieve nirvana? Is he trying to achieve nirvana where nothing more is left over? The no more baggage nirvana. He is trying to achieve the no more baggage nirvana, right? Which in the lower school, Abhidharma school, means he's trying to achieve the point where, say, Bemrik Gyunchepa. Very beautiful Abhidharma idiom. Bemrik Gyunchepa. Bembo means physical matter. Bamboo means physical matter. Rik means mind. Chepa means cut off, terminated, stopped in midstream. Okay, so they believe Bemrik Gyunchepa is the definition of nirvana for them. Okay, the sudden termination. The sudden, what do you call that? How do you say? Severance is perfect. Severance is perfect. The sudden severance of body and mind is for them nirvana with no more baggage. Okay? So can we say, if I agree that that's what nirvana is, if I agree that's what nirvana with no more baggage is, right? Then at such time as that nirvana is there, can there still be the guy? No, okay? But if the guy is there, can that nirvana be there?
No.
That's a problem. Kyun. Kyun do. Okay? There is a problem. Got it? Okay? If what you're saying is true, if Arya Nagarjuna were talking about the cessation of the body and mind of a person in the sense of their stopping, we have a problem. Okay? Because when you achieve it, you're not there anymore. And if you're still there, you haven't achieved it. But you're trying to achieve it. And you never can. Okay? So he must have been talking about finished off in the sense of it never came from anybody else but you. If you don't like your nose, which is part of your Sakchi Nyerlingi Pumbo, that's your problem. Okay? Because you created it. Got it? Alright? Got it? Just nod. Come on, I gave you a snack, you should nod. Where's the... You got all food? Did everybody get something to eat?
This is just all the nose and the heart sutra, right? You know, there's no...
They didn't get any... There wasn't any snacky thing? No, but did you get... Did
yes.
Okay. I have a policy before a big class or a big dinner with a sponsor, I always eat a lot. And then they think I'm like this really good monk who doesn't want to eat. Okay.
All right.
Huh?
Of
course, yeah. No, I set the alarm to go off and then I... I put earplugs in. They hear the alarm going. Okay. One. Three. Somebody came up to me and said, Geshe-la, I gave my first teaching over the last break. I said, great, you've risen to a new level of hypocrisy. All right. One, two, three. Dhamane sepala chepa yinde yulamane dhane sepe seche cha. And that's true because the higher line has that line, let's be cute, about that says, that line which says, we say that it is finished in the sense of having been finished from the beginning. Got it? What's Gyulama in Sanskrit? Uttara Tantra. Say Uttara. Tantra. Uttara Tantra Tantra Yimbata.
No.
So are you telling me the Uttara Tantra is a Tantra?
No.
Yeah, okay, so there's a book, there's an open book in Buddhism, very famous open teaching called Uttara Tantra. And Tantra in that book's name has nothing to do with Tantra meaning secret book. Okay. It just means a line. Okay. Like the thread that a Brahmin wears, sometimes called a sutra, sometimes a tantra. Okay, so Uttara means higher. Okay, so it's a book by a Sangha Maitreya, dictated to a Sangha by Maitreya, according to belief. But what school does it represent?
Mind only.
It does, right? So is that a good quotation to use here? Yeah, that's a good point. But is it safe to use a quotation from a Ngumawa book? You see, this we were just fighting with someone who said that the aspirin worked from its own sign. And we called him a working thingist. We called him a working thingist. Okay? And now we're quoting from a working thingist book to defeat him. Is that okay? It's perfect. It's perfect. It's perfect. You should use his own book against him. Got it? All right? Okay. That's the best kind of book to use. I mean, if you're debating with a Christian, you don't quote the Quran. Okay. But if you're debating with a Muslim, can you quote the Bible? Is there not a chapter in the Quran about Jesus? Anyway, here we go. 1, 2, 3. Sumba, tsepa, bawa, la, delba, ne, shebe, tsepa, bawa, dang, ma, shebe, tsepa, bawa, ni. So this is the great, great, great beauty of the monastic textbook system. It's the great jewel. It's the great beauty of the monastic system. Say gak shak bong sum. Gak shak bong sum. Shenlu gapa rangu shapa tsapa pong. So say shenlu gakpa. The first step in every monastic textbook presentation is to show why the other guy is wrong. Okay? We show why the other guy... That's the first step. We present wrong ideas and defeat them one by one. Okay? Rather than rangluk shakpa, which is what? Our position. So, you know, those of you who are interested in pedagogy, the science of teaching, how to teach people, right? This is a very beautiful thing. If you open up a Western textbook, there's a list of things you're supposed to know and that you're supposed to agree to, right? Like they present chemistry and then they just list the elements for you and they tell you what to think about them. If a Western textbook were written in Gakshak Ponsum style, they would start out with all the arguments against modern chemistry. And not stupid arguments. Very subtle, very beautiful, very convincing, very tempting arguments about why chemistry is wrong. Okay? So then you work your way through all the objections to chemistry that have ever been presented. Slowly, you work your way through very convincing objections to the science of chemistry, right? By the time you finish that, you believe in chemistry. Without being told what modern chemistry is. You see? And you already have a perfect idea of what modern chemistry is by learning what it's not. Okay? You get to hear somebody make 50 arguments about why modern chemistry is wrong. You see them defeated one by one. And then you're almost ready to write the second section yourself, which is Rangluk Shakpa, which means what? You know, what we believe. It's what the real thing is. Normally in a monastic text, that's 3 sentences, 4 sentences, almost nothing. Okay? Then they jump into tsupapong. What's tsupapong? Step 3, tsupapong. He gets to come back. It's so nice. It's so perfect. He gets to come back and say, I have a problem with your system. You know? I fought against modern chemistry. You defeated me 50 times in the introduction to your book. Then you made like 5 sentences where you described your idea about modern chemistry. Well, I have a problem with your ideas. Okay? He gets to come back. You know, we don't just beat him and throw him out. He gets to wait and again attack us, re-attack us on the basis of what we believe. Got it? It's very beautiful. So then not only do you understand wrong positions about what we believe, but you get to see a very sophisticated debater attack what we believe, you know, and defend it. You know? Then you get up in front of an audience in Taipei, or you sit with your table group in Singapore around the table, and, you know, if you've been fed this for a few years, and they start arguing with you, you're like, boom, 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 you know? You're like, just ready, right? You're just like, and you don't get upset, and you don't get defensive, and you're very... good teacher. We took 20 Diamond Mountain teachers on the tour. I sat in on each one, like I spied on each one. I went to each one's group. Over the course of a month, I went and saw every teacher teach. And they were slick. They were really good, you know. I was so proud of everybody, you know. Somehow Diamond Mountain worked. I don't know how. But But people were questioned in, you know, hotly by people. And they were so cool and they were so collected. Stefan, I remember in Taipei, right? He gets up in front of 1,200 people and they're like throwing questions at him. And he's just smiling, his smile, and giving this Alicia in Vietnam? Singapore. Yeah, and they're like debating these guys and they're just smiling and answering, and that's someone who's been fed it this way. Because then it's not to the point to be argumentative, because you can't win arguments with your spouse anyway, no matter how logical you are. The point is that in the world, you know, sitting around a table with a bunch of people at a retreat in Singapore, you can be persuasive and you can help people. You know, people, when I'm still getting emails, I get them about once a day. I get an email from somebody who was sitting around the table in Singapore. And they say, "You don't remember me. My name is T Peng. The other day I did this thing. I tried out what my teacher at the table said, and I had this incredible success in my business, and I just wanted to thank you, you know." So, this is the point, right? This is the point of all of this thing. So then you're in a position to really help people, right? In their real lives, right? Because you've been in the heat of the argument, and you've heard that 1,000 times. And then you're so smooth and slick and gentle and calm when they're debating you around I saw Nicole Vigna. She's like, "There are 3 business problems you're going to have to work on." She's telling this big executive, where was that, in Singapore? Hong Kong. But it was beautiful, you know. I was like watching this thing go down, you know, and I'm like, wow, you know, he's got a $1 billion company, she's lecturing him. And she's saying the right thing. And he's grateful and he smelled it, you know. He said, "Yeah, she's right." And he smelled it. And she helped him. It was beautiful. It was very beautiful. It was really impressive. You had to be there to see how beautiful it was. Okay. So we'll do Tsupapon one next time. And this guy gets to come back and attack us, okay? Which I think is so fair. All right? Okay. So I'll see you next week. You ready? Let's do a mandala. Would you like to do it? Buddhi mandalam riraminshi Nyam Bali Samye Shindu Nimpe Uwani Dogunam Lashima Jubasho Inam Guru Rana Mandala Kamiya Ami Dhe Vogun Sanami she tsozo shin Sanami she le chume Damba kuni to ba sho. Yeah, be there next time. Okay. Thank you.